What up, y'all? You're listening to the Gabacho Borracho U.S. Soccer Talk Podcast with your hosts, Thomas Miller
and Corey Adair,
your go-to podcast for gambling on soccer and hot, hot, hot U.S. men's national team takes. Take it away. Go, go, USA!
Gratefully claims it. Distribution, brilliant. Landon Donovan, there are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey is denied again, but Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA! Certainly through! Oh, it's incredible!
What up, y'all? You're listening to the Gabacho Borracho U.S. Soccer Talk Podcast with your hosts, Thomas Miller
and Corey Adair,
your go-to podcast for gambling on soccer and hot, hot, hot U.S. men's national team takes. Take it away. Go, go, USA!
Gratefully claims it. Distribution, brilliant. Landon Donovan, there are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey is denied again, but Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA! Certainly through! Oh, it's incredible!
All right, and welcome to the next episode of the Gabacho Borracho U.S. Soccer Talk Podcast. As always, it is Corey Adair at DJCorf07 on the Twitterverse, and I am here with my cohorts. I am with Thomas Miller at Don Thomas Miller and Dan Angel at Dan Angel 11. Per usual, how are we doing today, guys?
A lot better than Tottenham.
Spurs has gotten super Spursy on Dave Portnoy, and I am here for every second of it. It's gotten to the point now where my algorithm doesn't show him. Like I have to go to his profile and look after they lose because it doesn't pop up on my algorithm anymore. Yeah. But yeah, Tottenham's gone a little bit downhill as of late. I love it. I absolutely love it. We all knew it was going to happen, right? We talked about it on your bunch. We knew that eventually they would lose form, that they weren't going to stay that hot the entire time. Mm-hmm. It's just the way that they are. It is just, they are who we think they are.
Oh man,
not much different than the Chargers. You know, if you lose a 27-point lead, it's going to be the Chargers,
dude. They're the Dallas Cowboys.
If there's a team that's going to do it, it's going to be the Colts.
Except for they did the opposite of it recently, semi-recently.
What do you mean?
When they came back against the Chiefs?
Oh,
I'm
referring to the fact that the Colts were up 33-0 on the Vikings and found a way to lose.
Right. I'm thinking more of like an organizational thing. It seems like the Chargers are always like really good at either starting off really hot and finishing really cold, starting really cold, finishing really hot in a season aspect, also in a game aspect. They just seem like that type of franchise that it just never gets it all together.
Well, to bring it back to soccer, I mean, the inverse of that is Manchester City now, because City has had 5 matches this season where they've been behind by 2 goals, and they have managed to get at least a draw in all of them.
Yes, and they've also turned around and figured out ways to lose to the likes of, what was it, Brentford a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they almost, in all honesty, and this is a topic that we're going to talk about, you know, a little bit later. We're going to talk about second half predictions, but it almost feels like City is tapped out on the Prem, just on the season, or at least Pep feels it.
I'd have agreed with you before that second half.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So,
yep.
Can you guys hear me? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I would compare Tottenham to modern day Dallas Cowboys, that they always have all this hype and then they fucking shit the bed constantly.
To hear
Ted Lasso tell it, they're the Jets.
They're the Jets.
except for note, I think Thomas is onto something there, because not only do they have the hype because they have the money and the fan base.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So they inevitably are going to get that hype, but they're not run by a serious GM and serious manager. You know, like they don't have that special, you know, Michael's secret sauce or, you know, whatever, yeah. whatever, you know what I mean? Like they just don't have that little bit of juice ever yeah. since. And to compare it to the Cowboys, like you're talking about, ever since there was a salary cap, they've lost that.
Yeah. Yeah, and
well, the Cowboys would have been fine with a salary cap. It's not the salary cap that killed the Cowboys. It was losing Jimmy Johnson of the Cowboys.
Barry Switzer isn't a good coach.
Barry Switzer is a good coach, but Barry Switzer is not a good general manager, which Jerry Jones has the title. And basically the dynamic in Dallas was before Jimmy Johnson left and they brought in Barry Switzer, Jerry Jones basically let Jimmy Johnson do the general manager work and kind of stayed out of the way, which didn't happen when Barry Switzer became the coach. Jerry Jones just took that over himself.
See,
but there's but something like when Dallas won their first Super Bowl under Jimmy Johnson, the salary cap didn't even matter because Dallas was the lowest paid team in the league.
Right. I guess my counter, not necessarily like a counter argument, but just a counter thought process. If there was one coach in the last 30 years in the NFL that's a Hall of Fame coach that personality type wise, I would assume wouldn't let anybody above him tell him what he has to do to make a winning team, it would be Bill Parcells. And that didn't work.
It worked okay. I mean, like it worked a lot better than it had been working. I mean, Parcells won a division title or two in there. But
right, but not to Cowboys fan standards.
No, that's true. That's
and,
true.
And it had to do with Jerry Jones.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, it's like Parcells once said, if they want you to cook the dinner, they should let you shop for some of the groceries. And Jones hasn't done that since he ran Jimmy Johnson out of Dallas.
So this is really funny that we're doing this because, you know, we all love PG. I know we all love PG. And
we do.
PG loves all of us. So it's funny, but Thomas is a Niners fan, and I've been doing this thing where I randomly try to get under Potato's skin this week and just go hashtag Team Thomas. And GB isn't letting me down right now.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this some, like a lot of this up close with some of the people that I grew up with because, I mean, being from Virginia, like, yes, the Commanders franchise gets a lot of the attention, but growing up in the 90s and having to watch some terrible Washington teams, a lot of people resented that and became Dallas fans just to spite the Washington fans. So I've seen plenty of Dallas fans who have been suffering ever since that and have been fed up with how things are just poorly run there.
When did Gibbs win that Super Bowl?
Gibbs won that Super Bowl in 1992.
Okay, so that seems very, very fair weather to me. If you're going to say that in the 90s that Washington...
I was four when that happened.
Huh?
I was four when that
happened. Not you. I'm not saying you. I'm saying people. You're saying that people in the 90s switched from back, you know, the team back then.
No, they didn't switch. Like, these were people my age who...
Oh.
Yes, okay. These were people my age who went because Gibbs didn't last very long after that Super Bowl. Like he retired, like 2 years later, he had retired for the first time, and the Washington franchise went through a bunch of poor decisions. Yes.
Bad
decisions. By the time that people my age were understanding, like I'm an exception because I'm ridiculous with my paying attention to sports, but by the time people my age were starting to figure out what football was, by that time Dallas had won three Super Bowls and Washington's Super Bowl title was ancient history. Like they were coming off like a couple 3-13 campaigns and suffering through Heath Shuler at quarterback.
Yeah. And something is to be said there that there is a ton of value in taking an entire draft class and putting it all on the offensive line. Just throwing it out there. Just yeah. throwing that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's Cowboys fans all over the country.
There are.
And there's something to be said with taking an entire draft class and trading it for Ricky Williams. Which we're all old enough to know.
Well, no, I was getting at the Hogs, you know, the whole reason
Dynasty
happened that and it ended up culminating in that Super Bowl with Gibbs. But you know, the
third one.
Yeah, his third because one, Washington spent an entire draft only drafted offensive linemen. And built this thing. It was almost like what the Cowboys did, you know, 10 years ago. You just take an entire offseason, build that offensive line, because as long as you can control the line of scrimmage, you will control the game.
It's what the Cowboys did in the 90s, dude.
Yes,
it is. Nate Newton, Eric.
Dude, it's why Elway won his two Super Bowls.
Mark Stepnoski. I mean, yeah. Dallas had a great offensive line.
Like,
have you guys ever seen the ESPN short, The Great Trade Robbery?
Is that the Herschel Walker one?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, like, the way Jimmy Johnson built that team was he just got draft pick after draft pick after draft pick by making a bunch of trades. And when you have that many high picks, you're going to find a few gems here and there. I mean, he turned Herschel Walker into Emmitt Smith, a few quality linemen on both sides of the ball.
I think his experience in college coming out of Miami
had
a lot to do with him having a higher value on kids coming out of college in order to find those diamonds. You know? True.
But also at that point, free agency was kind of a mess back then. Like, full free agency wouldn't happen until after the Cowboys' second Super Bowl title. So you either had to go with a weird system called Plan B, which I still fully don't understand.
Plan B.
Are you okay there, Corey?
Yeah, I'm good. Don't edit that out, Thomas.
Plan B.
Plan B, baby.
But yeah, I still don't understand what Plan B free agency was. Like, I think it was teams could protect X amount of players, and like the 10 or so guys that they didn't protect were fair game for other teams to sign, but I could be wrong on all the details. But beyond that, you had to either draft or trade. So he went head on into the draft and made it work.
Yep.
I'm laughing because, hold on. I'm laughing because 30 years ago, Plan B free agency means something completely different than today.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was a thing to, what do they call it? Like equality? No, equality? No, it's like they just wanted to make the league what it fair. Is today. Yeah, it was fair. Yeah, it was like a fair play.
Thing. Yeah, fair play. There you go.
I remember watching a Bob Costas take on it, like a prepared, statement that, the Cowboys were always going to be like 14-2 and playing like the team that's constantly 2-14 or whatever, and that was their thing. It's like, and now we got into the salary cap thing, and basically a team can, any team in the entire league, which is kind of cool. It's totally different from soccer. Like, can go from being the absolute worst team in the entire league and to having, like a Super Bowl contender within two, three years.
Yeah. Look at the Bengals last year.
Yeah. Yep. I got to put this out in a public forum aspect. I put in the group chat one time, and I still stand by it. As long as the Denver Broncos have Russell Wilson as their starting quarterback, I cannot root for my team. In the meantime, I am millimeters away from declaring as a Bengals. I am so close. Zach Taylor at head coach, Nebraska legacy starting at quarterback. You have Stanley Morgan on the roster. You have Cam Taylor-Britt starting at corner. I think I have to. You're laughing, Thomas, but I think I have to. What?
No, I mean, no. I'm kind of in agreement. Yeah.
It's a Chase, lot of Nebraska
Chase
flavor.
Is on the case. Chase is on the case is probably my favorite call because my kid loves it.
Same here, dude. That's an old, OG Kale thing right there. but there's so much Nebraska flavor. Black and orange, I can get down with that color, that color scheme.
Yeah, it's not that far from what you're already used to with Denver.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it feels like the poor man's version of the Bills.
Yeah.
Bills are everybody's lovable loser. Well, you want a real lovable loser, you go to the Bengals.
Bungles. Yeah. The Bungles.
Bungles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a much, much more well-run franchise now. I mean, back in the 90s, that was not the case. Like, yeah. NFL Network, when they chose the 10 worst teams in history, they decided the Bengals were so bad in the 90s, we couldn't limit ourselves to just one, so we chose them all.
Yeah, I think ever since they hired Marvin Lewis, it's been just in general a different.
It has.
It's been different.
Right? Lewis changed the culture. Like, before that, though, this was a franchise that thought Dave Shula was the answer.
Not Don.
No.
Not Don.
Apparently, the other choice when they hired Dave Shula was Bill Cowher.
They fucked that up.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So enough random NFL. It's NFL playoff season. We can't help it. We are American and we are non-apologetic about it.
We just delve into whatever sport we feel like talking about sometimes.
Well, and Thomas is
going. The AFC is, there's probably three teams that are better than almost any team.
I still think San Francisco is going to win it.
San Francisco can totally win it. I mean, it's really if Brock Purdy can like just not make mistakes. But I mean,
but see, here's the thing.
If you're going to line up the final four teams in the NFC versus the final four teams in the AFC, come on. I mean, there's three teams in the AFC that are super scary. You got here's the Bengals, the Bills, and the Chiefs.
People love to rip on Purdy when he makes a bad throw, but in reality, is that bad throw hurting the team?
It hasn't to this point.
That's my point.
If there was a way to scheme your defense where Purdy just has to make like pinpoint throws, yeah, the Niners are going to be fucked. But the way their offense works, they got like three really good running backs and like three really good wide receivers.
Yeah.
And two of them are running backs.
And I mean, yeah. And you got George Kittle there.
Yeah. You got George Kittle. Yeah.
Oh, dude. And this is something me and Thomas talked about. You have so many. It's not even that you have Kittle. You have Kittle in between the hashes and to do whatever you need him to do. You have two amazing receivers on the, not amazing. Well, you have one amazing receiver. Ayuk is still
really, Ayuk is amazing.
He's really good.
Corner in the league.
I'm not going to say amazing, but I am going to say really good. Debo is top tier. You have three guys that outside of 10 yards, the routes that they can combine with. But then you have CMC, who's just literally unstoppable. And the moment he comes out, you have Elijah Mitchell who comes in, who's really good too. And then you have the best fullback in the game.
Yeah, you can dump it off to the fullback. I mean,
You have the best fullback in the league. So
that's why Purdy doesn't have to be pinpoint accurate because the offensive scheme and Shanahan is probably, he's probably at this point the best coach. And like,
again, I mean, coming back to
his scheme is the best scheme in the,
we talked about offensive lines dictating games.
Yeah.
His dad kind of changed how offensive lines can dictate games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
West Coast offense. Yeah.
West Coast offense, but zone blocking scheme with undersized guys.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, you got Orlando Gary running for 1,000 yards. But Kyle does the same kind of thing. And now he's got two running backs. Cause even before CMC got there, it looked like it was going to be Elijah Mitchell and Trey Sermon or Jeff Wilson. I mean, it almost felt like the old school Denver days where it didn't matter what running back you put in there, they were getting 120 yards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and now you put CMC in there.
Yeah,
dude, this offense, he doesn't have to make every throw. He just can't make the bad throw.
Yeah, and Purdy does not have to win anything for the 49ers to win. He just has to not lose the game.
Yeah,
and he hasn't yet.
And mix that in with an amazing defense. They've been kind of gutted, like towards the second half of the season. They've been kind of like giving up points and yards and stuff, but.
Like
it's kind of like
honestly, it feels a little like a rich man's version of the first Patriots dynasty.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. And actually you just touched on something there where this feels like a young underrated quarterback stepping in and making all the right decisions and being put in a situation where he has weapons around him. You know, and obviously there are things that aren't parallels, as in like the Patriots back then didn't have necessarily as good weapons on offense in the skill positions as the Niners have.
Exactly, which is why I said it's the rich man's version.
Yes, but the defense of the Patriots was better then versus what the Niners have as far as Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame player. Dude, I'm sorry,
front seven is questionable on that. The secondary for the Niners.
There's no nose tackle today as good as what the New England had back then.
Right.
No. But I mean, is anybody as good as Bosa? Honestly.
I honestly think
even his older brother is way worse.
If you wanted to compare apples to apples, they play different positions. I would rather build my defense around Vince Wilfork than I would Bosa, personally.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you're building a 3-4 stack the run sort of defense. Right.
I think he was a better nose tackle. The thing was,
like, Wilfork wasn't even there for the part of that dynasty.
That's right.
Like, Wilfork joined when they had already had a couple Super Bowls under their belt.
That's right.
But, I mean, you're still talking about a defense that included, like, Lawyer Malloy, Ty Law, Teddy Bruschi.
Yeah.
So it was still a championship defense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but, you're right. It is the rich man's version.
Yeah, like the 49ers seem to be what the Patriots were 20 years ago, but a little more advanced.
I like their chances.
I do. I do too.
Yeah, me too.
Hashtag
eventually we are going to talk soccer on this podcast.
Yeah, no, let's go ahead and get into it. We do have a window. I think there's, what, two matches, Thomas, you said? Two? And the roster dropped yesterday. It's a lot of names that we have seen, you know, over the last year and a half, two years. I'd say 60% of the roster is, you know, pretty similar names. There's some names that we haven't called up before. But Thomas, who are we playing and what are your thoughts on this window?
So we are playing Colombia and Serbia. And it's all MLS roster. MLS is out of season. This is a thing they do every January, just trying to, I guess, like, get players to play when they're not playing. I mean, it's always kind of like a future building thing. We're going to play, you know, absolute touring squads with Serbia, with Colombia. And I mean, I don't know. It's just like, it's nice. It's like a little MLS, like, kind of show off game or whatever, camp, two games. It's just like, I don't know. I mean, like, there's been talk about, like, if it matters, it doesn't matter at all. And then also, like, does this grow the men's national? And I say probably not. It probably doesn't grow us, but, like, it's nice to see, like, these young MLS talent getting a stage to play.
Well, okay, so I don't think in this exact moment we can say it does or doesn't grow our roster, right? Because it all really depends on who Serbia calls up and who Colombia calls up, mm-hmm. who they start, right? Obviously, the games don't matter. They're friendlies, right? They're friendlies. They don't have any weight behind them. It's a total crapshoot on who takes it seriously and who doesn't. But if I can say it this way, Serbia in a match that matters is a really quality side. Colombia in a match that matters is a really quality side. So it really depends on who they call up and who they play against us.
Yeah, but it's not even a FIFA. It's not a FIFA window. It's not a FIFA break. So, I mean, it's going to be all
young. It's probably going to be all young people then.
Yeah.
Which I think is still valuable. I think anytime, especially with the way that we manage the roster, right? Anytime you can get guys that had World Cup experience that have played with the national team for years and infuse that into a large group of really young guys that have never been called up before, whether Serbia plays anybody good, whether Colombia plays anybody good, just to get them into a camp together and practice together and play together and get used to just kind of the routine of being called up. I think that in itself has value,
mm-hmm.
let alone the potential chemistry that could build here, because there are names on this roster where I think getting them 90 minutes together could really build some chemistry. As you know, we talk about it all the time where this is our quote unquote golden generation, but we keep saying that this movement towards soccer and away from other US sports isn't just a generation thing. It's a wave thing. And this is just the first full wave, and we're going to have more waves after it. There are multiple names on this roster that I feel are part of that second wave. So getting them into a camp, just that, with people that have been there and done it, I think there is value there.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand. No. I understand what you're trying to say, Thomas. I kind of am trying to open it up for debate right now. What, you know, what don't you agree with on that, though? Honestly.
I don't know. It's just like, it's similar to say, like, it's not even similar to say, I would say just like, I would be more impressed by our U20 team playing in a U20 tournament, like that, you know, everybody send their best U20s. It's just like, I don't know. I mean, some of these guys I'm excited to see play or whatever, but at the same point, like, There's no way. No, Serbia is not going to send anywhere close to their best team. Colombia is not going to send anywhere close to their best team. And I mean, so it's just like.
Well, Serbia definitely won't. Colombia might, because like, I don't know, like, what's the situation like with the calendar in Colombia? Like,
well, their best players are playing in.
Right, but they also did just miss the World Cup. So I'm not saying necessarily their best players will get called up, but I think that they would call up a bunch of young people that are in their domestic league or within South American leagues that aren't necessarily playing right now because they didn't make the last World Cup.
Yeah, it totally could be.
I honestly could see them treating this the same way we're treating it.
Right. All right. So Colombia is just getting started with the Apertura next week. So I don't know. Maybe some of those clubs will release some of their younger players for this match, but tough to say.
And to kind of, I will concede, you know, I'll concede certain things to you know, I do agree with Thomas in certain aspects that a non-FIFA sanctioned window when it comes to friendly specifically, it is almost like a closed door joint practice in the NFL in preseason.
Yeah. And looking at this, Colombia is going to include 6 MLS players in their roster.
Yeah. So this is basically like a MLS showcase, which I'm fine with. Like, we need to grow the league and we're off right now until March because of obvious reasons, because of weather and stuff. But like,
oh yeah. How's the weather, Thomas?
It's snowy and terrible. And like at least half the teams in MLS could not be playing right now.
Yeah.
I mean, but we could schedule a fucking FIFA World Cup qualifier with Honduras.
72 right here.
72 in Columbus. Yeah. Or I mean, yeah. In Indianapolis. Sorry.
No, I'm not in Indianapolis right now.
Oh, you're in Florida. You're in Florida.
Yeah, I'm in Northern Florida at the moment.
Yeah, and we got over 7.2 inches of snow in the last.
Yeah, 12. It's 39 in rain in Plainfield right now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's just like, I mean, it's an MLS showcase game.
It is, but at the same time, I mean, getting those young kids some cohesive experience, like even if it is against a B side, against Serbia or Colombia, it's still a name opponent. It's still getting game action, and I mean, you take that wherever you can get it.
Yep.
That said, it is a little bit awkward in that we don't know who's going to be coaching this team moving forward.
Yeah, we don't know. But I mean, everything I've said, I'll be watching the games.
Oh, I'm totally watching. Dude, there's a few names specifically on here. I'm going to watch these matches or these games because I'm hoping to dear God, Slonina starts in the net for the first time, right? Like, I want to see him. He's at Chelsea, but he's only playing in the under 21 team. Hopefully he can do something in this window that could entice Chelsea to put him out on loan.
Yeah.
You know, and then I'm looking at Jonathan Gomez. I'm on the defender side of things. I want to see him get some minutes in the midfield. Paxton Aaronson, obviously we need to get him going. Williamson, I liked what he did at the Gold Cup. I would like to see him get going. As forwards are concerned, Cade Cowell, we've been waiting for him to get his call-ups, you know? And Vasquez, we talked about him.
We've talked about him a lot.
Yeah. We want him to get, you know, we want him to get some minutes. And Hoppy, who's kind of fallen off once he moved to Spain. There's names in here where it's only two matches, and they're obviously bringing a bunch of guys that haven't had too many caps to try to play a bunch of people. But there are names in here I would like to see get significant minutes that have never seen those minutes. And that could really help them either get to Europe or help them in Europe.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And yeah. I think that's where the real value is.
Right. And on top of that, I mean, like when you get into March, I mean, Nations League probably isn't going to mean that much because let's be honest, we should smack Grenada and El Salvador pretty easily. But I mean, you give some of these young guys some experience now, and then you can see them perform in a match that actually does carry a little bit of weight.
Yeah, and I'll pick out three names that I think really apply to what you just said there, Dan. And that's Cade Cowell, potentially Vasquez, and Paxton Aaronson, mm-hmm. maybe Jonathan Gomez. Those four names, right? Get them a lot of minutes in this window, And then you get to Nations League and they could very well potentially be a part of that roster. And then you can start pulling some of the MLS guys like the Jordan Morris is out. I would much rather see Paxton Aaronson get called up than Jordan Morris.
Yeah.
At a potential, right? He hasn't done it long enough to say that he would perform at that level. But if you give him the minutes and he shows that potential, I would much rather have a roster that gets called up on potential with some performance than all performance with very little potential.
Sure, sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I mean, like, we're not going to be playing competitive matches for the most part over the next few years. So we have to use any match we get to see who is going to be in a position to possibly help us.
Yeah. And I mean, you want to bring up something that really doesn't matter, but it's still kind of cool. You want to talk about hair game, Cade Cowell and Eric Williamson? Their hair games are on point.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch. Now, I'm excited for the window. Anytime the United States men's national team plays, I get excited. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, I'll watch it, definitely. I mean, I'm the same way. They're wearing the crest. Like, it's must-see TV for me. And as long as they don't put the games up against, like, any sort of major sporting events, like NFL playoffs or something.
Here, Thomas, real quick, what starting 11 would you like to see play at least 70 minutes in the first match? I could go through it real quick, and then if you want me to.
Yeah, I would see Jonah.
Jonah.
Goldman. That's what they
call it. No. Start with keeper and go. Start a keeper and.
Okay, I would obviously like to see Solina.
Yep.
Keeper Jonah.
Yep.
Freaking Sam Rogers, I guess. I don't know.
I would like to see any. We'll do this Walker together.
I mean, we've seen what we can see here.
Hey, well, let's do this together then. We'll riff here. We'll do this together. Gomez, because he plays fullback, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So Gomez for sure. And then my take is that I would like to see any one of these names that I don't know play along with a name that I do know. And that name that I do know is Zimmerman. So I'd probably like to see that one of them play with Zimmerman.
Yeah. See, the thing I don't know if Walker Zimmerman really going to be part of your 2026 World Cup
plan. It's not about that. It's just about development at this point. Like, I would like to see one of them play with Zimmerman, and I'd like to see another one play with Long.
Yeah.
You know, I would like to have a veteran back there kind of showing the ropes.
Yeah, yeah. You can't force someone into that on their own.
Yep. And then Tom McCall, he's a six. You got to play him a few games. Paxton Aaronson, obviously, we want to see him.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd play Williamson with him, though.
Williamson's interesting.
Yeah.
He reminds me a lot of, and who's the dude from?
Tillman?
From Marseille.
De La Fuente?
Yeah.
But he plays forward.
Yeah. Well, he plays like an outside forward. It's the same sort of thing, which like it would never be included in the Berhalter thing because he likes his wing forwards to be tucked into the striker.
But I think he could develop into almost like a Malik Tillman role.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. That's another guy. Malik Tillman.
He's not but yeah, I like that. I could get down with that. Aaronson, Paul McCall, and Williamson. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you go with either Cade or Brandon Vasquez and our out-and-out striker. Brandon Vasquez probably because he's a big body.
Yeah, I think I'd go with Cowell, Hoppy, and Vasquez.
Yeah.
And then it's not Hoppy, it's anybody else.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do, what strategy it is. I mean, and then we got to, you know, find a coach and know what our formation is going to look like moving forward too.
Yeah, I just pray that we get to a 4-2-3-1 coach.
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
It would be nice. And yeah, I mean, like I said, yeah, all these guys, like you were saying, like get them on the crest, let them play some games, see what happens.
And we didn't even bring up Zendejas. You know, that's a kid that plays for Club America and he's a dual national. So the fact that we're calling him up for friendlies and then he's accepting it, and Mexico's at this tipping point where they really need to start finding young talent to start replacing guys, and they're struggling to, and he's coming up to play here. I don't know what his form is at America, but you would assume that would be the type of guy that they would make sure that they get.
Yeah.
You would think.
So, I mean, there's a bunch of names too that are not on the roster that are like in that kind of window for looking forward to 2026 that who aren't on the squad, but just for whatever reasons, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, it's going to be fun to watch.
But
I mean, if we win both games, we'll probably be sky high. If we tie or lose a game, we'll just be like, well, we got a bunch of MLS lifers.
Yeah, I'll be perfectly honest. If we win both games and it's way too heavy of a MLS veteran flavor, I'm not going to feel great about it. But if we win both games and there's token MLS flavor with a lot of young guys that we've never seen before, I'm going to feel pretty good about it.
Yeah.
Right.
But no, I think this is a good transition point. So we, you know, the World Cup interrupted the five big leagues in Europe just before the halfway point, and we're a month removed from the World Cup. So now we're getting into the second half of league play in Europe. And I think that we should talk about maybe predictions or recaps, you know, things that we found impressive from before, things that we think will happen, things that we think will change or continue to happen, you know, just kind of a conversation about how we think the second half is going to go. Obviously, we all have different leagues that we pay really close attention to, but I think that we can cover a decent spread out of this. So I just kind of want to talk about it, and I want to know what you guys think is going to happen in the second half of the season.
So one of the things I'm really looking forward to is the second half of the La Liga season. I think Barcelona has kind of shown in those last few weeks, even though they won whatever they called that tournament, that they went to Saudi Arabia for Copa del Rey, something. They beat the brakes off Real Madrid. And before that, I mean, they absolutely outplayed Atletico Madrid too. So, I mean, we're looking at a situation where right now Barcelona's in first place up on, I believe, 3 points. And so it's going to be really interesting to see if Real Madrid has anything like left in the tank, because they really play a lot of old guys. Barcelona is playing a bunch of young guys. I really think the La Liga, the race for to win the La Liga is going to be very interesting. And then on top of that, they actually have to play 2 times still, Barcelona. And so it's going to be super interesting. I love the way Barcelona is playing right now. Like, I would probably put them on almost any bet. I did look at them this week, and they're -625. So it's something I cannot just like out and out play. But I mean, Barcelona's been impressive, really, really impressive. And then also the other thing, England would just be if Arsenal can do it, you know.
Right.
We live in a generation where we're used to Arsenal shitting the bed. We're used to Arsenal being crap.
We're far enough removed from that undefeated team.
Yeah, yeah. It's been so many years now. It's almost 20 years. And so it will be interesting to see if they can hold off Man City and Man United, Newcastle.
Right.
I mean,
I do have a La Liga question for you.
Yeah.
Actually, Villarreal.
Always good.
Are they going to get relegated?
No.
They're in relegation zone.
They're in relegation zone, but no.
So is this a potential for a second half of the season uptick that you could make some money off of, is what this is why I'm asking you.
Yeah. I think, they returned to form, and I don't think there's any way you could see a English team go down. That's like a big name team. I would look at Everton
West Ham
going down.
Yep.
Like before a very big market Spanish league team, because I mean, I'm not going to get on here and say all these matches could be fixed, but they really could be fixed.
Well, and you actually bring up a good point, because the mainstay names in Spain never get relegated anymore. Not since like the early 90s.
No, they never even come close. Like you will see La Liga refs, La Liga players, teams participate in the most like absurd amount of shit to keep Villarreal up. I mean, they're not even a huge, huge market in Spain, but I mean, it's been a team that's been in Europe for the last 8 years, a pretty big team in Europe.
Yeah, and don't they have like Acuna and, you know, a bunch of players that made it to the semis of the World Cup?
I think if you look at every single team in Spain, aside from Real Madrid, it's a stab in the chest at how bad Spain as a national become. Like, they've fallen from grace. They've absolutely fallen from grace. American equivalent maybe would be, I don't even know, Lakers? I don't even fucking know.
Nebraska.
No. They were relevant. But, like, I mean, any team you see in Spain that has a bunch of Spaniards, they're fucking struggling, dude. Like, they cannot do it. Like, we've seen it in Champions League where only one of them advanced.
Yeah.
Around the 16. I mean, it's just been.
Well, and Real Madrid isn't a great example of a Spain team having Spaniards. Barcelona's a better.
No. That's what I said. I just literally watched a game where Real Madrid didn't have even one Spaniard in their starting 11. Not even one.
Sergio Ramos.
Right.
Yeah. Carvajal was, I think, suspended for that. He would have been the only one. I mean, that's their Real Madrid starting 11 has zero Spaniards.
Well, I mean, although, I mean, one thing I want to go back to, you talk about how Spanish teams, big teams, don't get relegated. I mean, the big name teams really don't get relegated in any of the big leagues. Like, who was the last really big name who got relegated in England?
I think I have a good example of this, and it would be Schalke, but that's Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Schalke, Werder Bremen.
Yeah. It does happen in Germany. I mean, Werder Bremen going down for the first time in 40 years. But by the same token, Werder Bremen hasn't really been that strong as of late, and Schalke has been kind of going off a cliff.
Right. Yeah, you don't see super big name English teams, but I mean, like, the mid-table English, because, like, that's where I would put Villarreal. It's kind of like a mid-table.
Right. Like, the biggest name to get relegated in England recently is probably Aston Villa.
Yeah. What was that, the 2019-2020 season?
I want to say it was 2016.
But I would put Villarreal, like, you know, you obviously got your big two, and then you have Atletico, and then you have teams like Valencia. I mean, after that, who else would you put, you know, in? What I'm saying is, once you get past those three, where Valencia is and where Villarreal is, there's a group there where it feels like they're all pretty similar. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just the Premier League effect on all of European soccer, because there was a time that wasn't that long ago. It was a few, like, 3-4 years ago, where, like, every team in La Liga, the top 3 or 4 or 5, would just completely dominate. It didn't matter. I mean, it was easy betting to just bet the shit team. And now we live in a system where
Real Sociedad doesn't give up home goals for an entire season last year.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. It's like a balance. Like, we talked about the NFL for like 25 minutes, and it's kind of the same sort of thing where, like, you can see some sort of team go up in whatever league, Italy, Spain, England, France, Germany, and they stay up, and they just become a fixture. You know? It's like almost like a Green Bay Packers or something like that, because, like, a lot of these cities are pretty small where they exist, and they just become these, like, solid squads that.
Yeah.
Are fun to watch, and they're good.
I'll go ahead and give my prem takes real quick. I'm about 60% Arsenal holds on to it, right? Like, I think they have a good enough position to where they could definitely win the league. Like, they should win the league. At this point, they should win it. They should. But there is plenty of season left to be played, plenty of minutes left to be played, and it does start this weekend. They play Manchester United, who, outside of Arsenal, is probably the hottest team in the Prem. And we're going to see what happens there. We're going to see what they get out of that one. But I would say 60% chance Arsenal wins it, 40% chance they don't. And if I had to pick a team to take it away from them right now in form and the way that things are going, I hate to say it, but it looks like Manchester United. I don't know what the future play is for winner of the league, but, you know, I'll look it up while we're talking. But I think that throwing a little bit of money at Manchester United to win the Prem might not be the worst idea in the world, because it looks like Ten Hag has got that shit turned around.
It does.
And then another take I have is, I don't think West Ham gets relegated. They're sitting in relegation zone, but that's the other part too, is from 13th all the way down to 20, or yeah, 13th all the way to down to 20th. They're only separated by 5 points. That's 3 weeks of matches. In 3 weeks, that the whole bottom, what is that? Bottom seven can look completely different. And I just think West Ham has too much skill on their side. If I had to say what three teams as a take right now that will get relegated as a prediction for the second half of the season. If there was ever a mainstay type of name, a mid-tier name that doesn't get relegated often, I'm going to say Palace would drop off. I think Southampton, Bournemouth, and out of all of these, it's either Palace or Forest. I think Everton barely escapes. I think West Ham gets better to the point where they clear it by three or four spots. Leeds could drop down with the way that they're playing, you know, but I think if I had to put money, I would say Palace, Bournemouth, and Southampton would get relegated.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement with Southampton, especially with Dan's future.
let's hope.
Like, okay, this is the thing, because they are so compact. Like, Forest was just on a thing, like, just a couple weeks ago, where they had given up 22 goals on the road and only scored one. And, I mean, and now they're in 13th, you know. So it's just like, I mean, you just...
But Palace's form lately has been even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Palace has been bad. Yeah, I mean, it's just... They're so bad. I've seen this a bunch of different times supporting West Ham, especially the...
I mean, hell, Leicester could go down.
Like, oh, dude, Leicester can't score goals, and that's with Vardy starting.
Yeah.
Vardy is, like, he's our age. Like,
I know, but this is a guy that, like, consistently scored double-digit goals for many years.
Yeah, but, I mean, 36, it's tough to do it anymore.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing, though, to take away from the Prem... And that I think will continue in the second half of the season. Fulham is going to go from getting promoted to playing an international play next
year. They might.
No. That's my take. Fulham will qualify for at least the Conference League.
I don't like where they're sitting. You got two big giants sitting behind you. I think they overtake them. I mean,
what place do you have to finish in though? Like ninth,
seven.
See, here's the thing though. In order to make the Conference League, you need to finish in the top seven. But that's if the FA Cup and the EFL Cup are won by teams who have already qualified.
Yeah.
And right now, there's a 50% chance that the EFL Cup could go to a team that has no hope of qualifying through the league standings.
Who's in the finals for the EFL?
So the EFL Cup final four is Manchester United, Newcastle, Forest, and Southampton.
Okay, Man U's going to win that.
I mean, they should, but they could easily screw it up. And if Southampton or Forest wins, then only the top six make it to...
Right, but what I'm saying is Ten Hag's personality and the fact that Man U hasn't won Civil War in a while, I think if he doesn't win the... If he finishes second in the league and Arsenal wins it, or he finishes third, right where they're at right now. Let's say they finish right where they're at right now. Or he drops down, Newcastle drops down, Spurs. I mean, as long as they qualify for Champions League, even if they didn't, I would say this, even if they didn't qualify for Champions League, if they qualified for Europa League, but they win a title and the trend for the season was that Manchester United played really well, Ten Hag's career looks like a success. And that's the trend that's the direction it looks like it's going right now.
Right.
I would say that I would say that they would win that.
Yeah. I mean, they should, but there's also that worry of fixture congestion.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, so the EFL Cup semifinal is a two-leg tie. So United's gonna have to go from playing Arsenal on Sunday to playing Forest that Wednesday. Then they've got the FA Cup, and then they've got the second leg with Forest before their next Premier League match. And then 2 weeks later, they turn around and play Europa League.
But they postpone matches in those situations.
They do, but... I mean, still, like, he's got to decide what to prioritize.
And I think he's the type of person that likes his chance. Like, he's going to prioritize winning a trophy within England and finishing top four. Like, those are going to be his two priorities.
Maybe.
And then maybe Europa League, but Europa League's a little bit down the road.
No, yeah. You can get into Champions League in Europa League. That's a thing.
Yeah. But that's also far enough down the road where he doesn't have to worry about it right now.
Right.
But we're getting into that road.
Yeah, we are.
We're on the exit from the on-ramp, and we're, like, getting to the freeway. If I'm going to pick three teams to get relegated, I'm going to go Forest, even though they're in 13, minus 19 goals, Bournemouth, and I'll stick with Dan's guarantee of the year, which is looking great.
It wasn't until Everton screwed it up.
I think Everton and West Ham have enough pull with, like, whatever it is, you know, like, they don't want to see those fan bases go down to championship. So I think
West Ham will survive, but I think Everton's gonna go down. I'm gonna say the three that go down are Everton, Southampton, and Leicester.
Wow.
That would be wild. Because
the Cherries is turning everything around.
Here's the irony, though.
I the Cherries just barely limping to the finish.
I said Everton would get relegated last year.
I know.
Yeah.
And all they did was sell their best players.
Yeah.
They're flirting. They need a Newcastle revival is what they need right now.
Yep.
And their form is really, really bad.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
It's terrible.
So terrible. Just terrible.
Terrible.
T-R-B-L.
All right. So, Dan, what is your biggest take for the second half of the season this year?
So the thing I'm looking at is for the Bundesliga, I mean, what's going to happen in this logjam of teams? Like, you've got Freiburg, Eintracht, and Union trying to break up from what has been Bayern, Leipzig, Dortmund, playground. And it's looking like Bayern is still going to be Bayern and still win the title, but Dortmund's going to have a hard time getting through. So I don't know. I mean, if Union can rediscover its form at the start of the season, then Champions League is a real possibility. But Leipzig has gotten rolling. Leverkusen is still out there and is far from cooked. I mean, they've won 3 matches in a row, and they're only 9 points out of a Champions League spot right now. So this could get really interesting down the stretch. And Wolfsburg is playing a lot better because they come in having won their past 4 matches before the break. So there's a lot of teams that could get interesting in the Bundesliga. And also looking at Serie A, I mean, at this point, the race is Napoli's to lose, and Napoli hasn't won a title since 1990.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to see Serie A go to somebody who's not Juventus, Milan, or Inter.
Yeah. Oh, no. And I could be wrong, and I'm sure I'll text him after we talk, but I do think that Logan is high on Napoli.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Napoli just does everything so well. I mean, they score a ridiculous amount of goals. They play great defense. They've got good young talent. I mean, there's a reason that they're sitting on 47 and Milan is some second best at 38.
What do you see on the bottom half of the league? I mean, Schalke has just looked like absolute.
Oh, they're getting relegated.
Schalke's going right back down to the second Bundesliga, no question.
Bochum has that advantage of their home pitch where it's really, really good. Really good. It's hard to win there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, Cologne seems to be in a struggle situation. Erta keeps flirting with disaster. Augsburg does the same thing. Like, it's going to be a really interesting battle at the bottom. But, yes, I think Schalke is this year's Greuther Fürth.
Yeah. R.I.P. Schalke.
Pretty much.
Unfortunately, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, second Bundesliga, who's likely to come up? Wow. Okay. So not any names that are all that familiar. Darmstadt and Hamburg are currently the two most likely teams to get promoted. So Hamburg has at least been up there fairly recently. So that'll be good to see a big city get back in.
Yeah. Yeah. Hanover is another classic.
Yeah.
They're kind of in the mix.
Like, yeah. Düsseldorf was there until they dropped 2 in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
We could see some big names going down in all the leagues.
Yeah, and Bielefeld could get double relegated.
That would be wild.
Yeah.
Go from Bundesliga 1 to whatever the third.
I think it's just the third Liga.
Third Liga?
Yeah, but yeah, Bielefeld was sitting bottom of the second Bundesliga and then won their past 2 matches to move up into a tie for 15th.
Yep, and America's favorite team in Serie A last year and Serie B this year is in the same situation. Venezia is on the bottom of the Serie B. Second from bottom on the Serie B.
That's
so
crazy.
Our Americans could be going to Serie C or whatever the fuck. Whatever
yeah, it is Serie C.
Not good. Not a good look.
No.
Beautiful
really
jerseys,
not.
But not a good look.
All right, so... Yeah, I think there's plenty of storylines and plenty of interesting things to pay attention to for the second half of the season. As always, every year, the closer we get to the end of the season, the more the pressure cooker starts to heat
up. And we're in a transfer window.
Yeah.
So we could see some of these teams that we're talking about possibly going down, sign somebody. Some of these teams in a title race could sign or put on loan somebody, and it just completely changes their season.
Yep.
Always true.
Like Harry Maguire going to West Ham totally changed.
Yeah, Thomas brought that up. Hey, you know what, though? Him for his national team is actually a very quality center back. Him for Man U, not so much.
Yeah.
But maybe him for West Ham could be. And I'm sorry, you guys are conceding way too many fucking goals.
I would put anybody.
You're supposed to have the best six in the world.
According to England.
And, well, if he's the best six in England, he's arguably the best six in the world.
True. And, yeah, when he puts on that Three Lions shirt, I mean, he's a totally different player.
No. I'm talking about Declan Rice.
Oh.
So Rice is supposed to be the best six in England. If you're the best six in the Prem, you're arguably the best six in the world.
Right.
Arguably.
But we want to always say that the Prem is the most physical, you know, league in the world. We want to say that, you know, and then his frame and the way that he plays.
Yeah.
You would want to argue he's the best six in the world, right?
Argue it.
How many goals is West Ham giving up, though?
A lot.
I don't think I'm not saying this to say that he's not as good as everybody thinks he is. He is. But there's something fucking going on here where you have that good of a center defensive midfielder and you're giving up that many goals. Harry Maguire might be the right guy.
Yeah, I'm for signing anybody because whatever is on the pitch isn't working.
Like I will say this till I die, but get the fucking rid of Cresswell. But Harry Maguire, I mean, if he finds a form that is somewhere between Man U and English national team, you need that right now.
I'll say him moving anywhere would be really good for him because he cannot get out of the memes. He can't get out of, you know, the criticism from the English Twitter, from English fan base. Him going anywhere that's not, you know, a giant club would probably be really for him. Just for his psyche, you know.
I think West Ham is the perfect fit. That's a team that gives you kind of English national team vibes.
Yeah.
Like they want to develop guys that are from England. You know, they want to be a farm team for the English national team. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily have the money to go buy international players. They have to develop and balance their books and do these types of things that promote English players.
Yes and no. I mean, they sign a ton of guys, but they just never seem to work out.
Yes and no. Yeah. But I think it's a good fit.
Yeah. I mean, I hate on him and it's funny to watch all the things they say about him as far as English people go, but like, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like West Ham defense is atrocious. Anything they can get to sign. I mean, anybody they can get really is worth trying out. Why not?
Yeah. But all right. Do we want to get into our plays of the week?
Let's do it.
I have a full card. I'm going to be fully transparent. One of these plays, I might not play. It depends on what everybody else does. I hate it, but I hated a play last week and it worked out. So I don't know. Also, that's something we didn't talk about. We had a set of two conflicting plays between me and Dan. And in all reality, Dan, I shouldn't have hit my play. I should have hit it. I should have gotten a push because that should not have been a goal. Do you? While I give my first play, did you see the first goal in that?
I did.
That should not have been a goal.
I don't know. I mean, I can see both sides of the argument.
Rashford ran up on it like he was going to play it.
I know.
That should automatically make it offside.
That's a fair argument. I don't know for sure where I stand on that. That's like it probably should have stayed with Thumb, the call that was made on the pitch either way.
I'll put it this way. If an attacking player runs up on the ball and looks like he's going to make a play on the ball, no matter what, it is going to affect the decision of the keeper.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good argument.
In the rule book, if it affects a player on the defense, then it's offside.
Well, yeah, then yeah, you're right. By the letter of the law, then yeah, it should have been disallowed.
Thomas?
They talk about interference and stuff. I'll just say, like, Premier League VAR has been the most controversial use of VAR that we've
ever seen. Should it have been a goal or no?
I can't tell you yes or no. I mean,
why?
Because sometimes it's a goal, sometimes it's just, I don't know. It's just like, I can't give you a definitive, honestly.
I think the fact that he ran up on it like he was going to play it.
I agree. I think if I have to pick a side, I'll agree with what Dan's at, where it was like, it's like a catch in the NFL where it's like, it's really like people on both sides could say it wasn't a catch. It was a catch, but the ruling on field was that, and they just couldn't, you know, disallow it. Then it brings up a thing. FIFA now has came out with a thing where in all their sanctioned events, the ref will have a microphone and will explain what he sees to overturn a call or to let a call stand.
Oh God. Yes. I like that.
Yeah. That's what we need. It's the same thing in hockey.
Transparency. You know, transparency.
Yeah. Yeah. Hockey, NFL, where the refs will get on, I think NBA too, right? Like the refs will get on the microphone for the stadium the TV broadcast and they'll say it now. It's a 12-month trial.
Could a person say that the most popular American sport just changed the world sport?
It's just a good idea because like sometimes we have no idea. There was a, what the fuck was I watching? There was a handball question. Where the fuck was it?
No. But what you're getting at is like in American football, when the ref goes to the screen and makes a decision, he comes out and explains it.
Yep. NHL too.
Yeah.
I think.
NBA, yeah. I was going to say, we could say that Canada's most popular sport has changed the world sport because the NHL has been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
I was being.
I know.
I was being an ass. I am an unapologetic American. You know what? I'm basically like the,
you're like Trump.
Simple version of Alexi Lawless.
You're like Trump. You're like the Trump version of it.
Oh, let's not.
Oh, dude, no.
Comment.
No. No, because I just compared myself to a reasonable version of Alexi Lawless, and he actually voted for Trump. So, like, let's not do this.
Oh, God.
Wait, did you just back up my point?
No. No, not at all.
Kidding, can we move past this, please?
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But we all agree that, because I think it was a... It was Real Madrid's last La Liga game. They like the broadcasters thought they were checking a handball where like a defender blocked the ball with his legs and then it bounced up on his hand. But then they ended up like finally showing a replay where it was definitely Real Madrid where the guy who was defending Vinicius reached out and touched the ball with his hand before that play. We had no idea. We had no idea what was going on with VAR. The announcers thought it was one thing. And then finally, like the international broadcast or the Spain broadcast showed the other handball, you know? So like, finally, we're going to get a definition of what's going on at least.
Yeah, I am always for transparency.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what decision you made and why you made it.
Yep, exactly. I love it so much, especially since VAR is so fucking.
Yeah. But all right. So my first play is going to come out. It's going to be Saturday morning and I'm going to take Liverpool Chelsea under 2.5. I know that Liverpool's defenses like to give up goals, but Chelsea has struggled to score goals. These are two teams that can't afford to give up 2 points. They both need a point. Like they both need to just like come out of this with something, anything, right? And I don't think Liverpool's offense is been playing all that great anyways. So I'll take the under 2.5 at +115.
Right. I like it.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same sort of thing. Two of the most disappointing teams in the Premier League are playing this weekend, Everton and West Ham. Both teams have scored a grand total of 15 goals on the year in league play. So I think that's just like one of the things where, like, do we say Vegas makes these soccer lines? Is there some like some other place in Europe that makes these lines?
I'm sure they contracted out some European people.
Yeah, it's so like they're just seeing these two shit teams and they really think they've only scored 15 goals each.
Hey, full disclosure, I scratched the only play that I scratched off my card was this match.
I think they think it's gonna end like 0-0. Like I've watched both these teams enough to know that I think they're gonna both fuck up and you can get both teams to score right now at Everton and
yep. They both just suck at scoring so much. This is like the style of contrarian pick that I've been doing lately.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, and I agree. They suck at scoring, but like, I think, yeah, I just think,
but they both give up goals.
Yeah. They fuck up so bad. I think it's at plus 100. I mean,
dude, what's over 2.5 at?
I'd have to look it up, but it's gotta be way over. if both teams score is even money, it's gotta be like plus 180 or plus 210.
Plus 105.
Yeah. I guess they're banking on somebody winning 2-0 or something. 1-0 or 0-0. I don't fucking know.
I don't know, but you're right. And your thought process on this one, I like it.
Thank you.
Dan?
All right. So for my first play, I am going to go with Union Berlin team total over 1.5 at plus 120 against Hoffenheim in the Iron Fortress. So Union obviously did not play well to close out the period before the break. But one thing Union has yet to do is lose a match at home this year. And in all but one of those matches, with the one exception being Bayern, Union has put home 2 goals, so two or more. So I'm thinking a team total over 1.5 at plus money against a Hoffenheim side that also came in pretty bad form. Looks like gone pretty solid value.
Yep.
First of all, I love that play. Second of all, we didn't even mention it. Bundesliga is back.
Yep. They're
off their Christmas break, their winter break. So we had a full fucking slate.
Yes, we do.
Of European soccer.
Yep.
Bundesliga is back.
All right, so I'm going to take Aston Villa double chance against Southampton. That is minus 245. Don't want to play by itself. I'm going to parlay that with Bournemouth and Forest under 2.5, which is at minus 150, but that comes out as a plus 134 play.
I thought about both of those games, and both just scare me too much that it could go wrong in either direction. But I think those plays make a lot of sense. I think that Southampton Villa match is going to finish 0-0.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as long as Villa doesn't lose, and I don't think Villa is going to lose to them.
Yeah.
And then as I don't think Bournemouth and Forest are going to score a bunch of goals.
Yeah. I mean, Bournemouth still hasn't scored since the break.
Yeah. And even if they do score, you can still hit under 2.5.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, my next one, looking at the Liverpool-Chelsea match, once again, you could say a couple of crap teams. Like, this is two teams who have completely underachieved, but I believe in my heart of hearts that Liverpool is much, much better than Chelsea is, and they're at home this match, and so I will just go ahead and ride that minus 120 money line. I think Liverpool puts it on them. I don't think it's really that close. A win to nil would be a good bet too. I don't know. That's my play for that one.
Something's wrong with Chelsea.
Yeah. Like,
whatever it is that's causing problems for Graham Potter's side. I mean, obviously Graham Potter hasn't been enough to fix it.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I mean, Liverpool obviously isn't where they should be either, but yeah, something is seriously wrong with Chelsea. So I like that play.
No, something is seriously wrong with Chelsea.
Yeah. They need Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
Or Jesse Marsh. they might fire a coach too.
It's possible.
I don't think it would be the first time they do that.
It's dude, very possible. At this point, I don't think there's any other option. Like, I don't know what the hell is going on with them. I said it last week too. I don't think they qualify for international play next week.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, and Liverpool,
right.
I think
so. Before you guys suck up all of the picks from England, I'm going to quickly jet over to the Premier League for my one and only play from the United Kingdom. And I'm going to go with Graham Potter's old employer of Brighton. And I'm going to take the Seagulls money line plus 110. I'm probably also going to sprinkle Brighton to win to nil at plus 280 against Leicester, because as we've touched on, the Foxes just cannot score. So Leicester not scoring, and Brighton has been a goal machine as of late. So I think getting plus money on the Seagulls to win this match against a Leicester side that is probably going to be missing a few key players, anyway, that looks like really good value.
And Brighton officially gets McAllister back. So that's one that if I was going to play something, I thought about playing under 2.5 because I thought Brighton might win 2-0.
Yeah, they might. But I think that money line, that plus money, is really nice.
Yep. All right. So I'm going to skip my third play, just because I just, this is the other one that I want to scratch out of it. Usually I make a card and I scratch plays that just scare me. So I'm going to skip that one. I'm going to take Newcastle money line and over 1.5 goals in a same game parlay against Crystal Palace.
Okay.
This is a oil money match. So Palace is in really bad form. Newcastle is at the top of their game. You can't take the money line and drink that juice and get anything out of it. But I do not believe that Newcastle wins this, and there's only one goal scored. So when you parlay those two together, it comes out to +130 +130.
I like it.
Yeah.
Oil money.
It makes a lot of sense.
You're either going to lose the bet with a 1-1 draw, or you're going to win and there's like four goals scored.
Yeah. Okay. For my next one, I'm jumping down to the championship. Sunday morning, we have Sunderland hosting Middlesbrough. And if we look at the past seven games for both of these teams, every single one has gone over 2.5. Multiple of those have been both teams to score, excluding the very last Middlesbrough game, which was against Millwall home, which they only won 1-0. But I mean, we're literally looking at 13 out of 14 that are both teams to score and over 2.5. I mean, the lines kind of dictate to that. But if I play both of those together, I can get it at +123.
There you go.
Yeah, not bad. All right. So for my next play, I'm going to dash into Portugal, and I'm going to ride Benfica to win 2-0 at +110 against Santa Clara. Santa Clara has been blanked in 3 of their past 4 matches. They are sitting 16th, which is right in the drop zone in the Portuguese League. And Benfica is looking like it's going to claim the title. They're sitting 4 points clear of everybody else. So, yeah, I think they come out with a fairly comfortable win 2-0 here.
There you go.
Portuguese league. What other American podcast?
American podcast are you getting bets on? Eredivisie, Bruges, Portuguese league.
Finnish second league.
Not this year. We're first league this year.
We're up to
the Bundesliga, and we're probably going straight back down.
I'm just saying, we do our due diligence and we scour.
We love it.
All right, so I have another two-leg parlay. I am going to take Leeds and Brentford, both teams to score. Brentford has been playing really good defense, but Leeds has been like, their goal is to try to dictate the pace of the game, and usually that ends up in them scoring. That's -180. I don't want to play that by itself. I do really feel good about that line. I've been riding Leeds, both teams to score, and it's been hitting more often than not. But I'm going to parlay that with Man City Wolves over 2.5. And that one is -205. But if you parlay them together, it comes out to +131. That's kind of my play of the weekend.
I mean, we've seen how frightening that Dom City attack going can be.
Yeah, I think my play of the weekend is that both teams to score and the over 2.5 in the Man City match parlay. I love it. I love this.
Yeah, I can certainly see why.
Yeah, I like it too. All right, for my last one, I'm going to give a couple of futures. I could not play them together as a parlay, even though I wanted to, apps that I looked them up. But it's just like, what would make West Ham fan Twitter absolutely lose their minds, but at the same time still be able to say we are fucking massive? So what I'm going with is West Ham to be relegated at +400, but then I'm also playing West Ham to win the Conference League at +400. So West Ham in the championship next year, but also in Europa League.
That'd be crazy.
To me, that would be the most West Ham fucking thing ever to do. Very Wigan adjacent, but I believe they did the same sort of thing.
Wigan did do that.
Yeah, and I just think, like, I mean, I really got to see something from them to make me convinced that they're not going to get relegated. We kind of touched on it earlier, and I didn't say they would get relegated, but man, they really, really could get relegated. But at the same time, I could totally see them winning the conference. Like, they seem to really have their heart in that tournament. So to me, that would be the perfect storm of West Ham fanhood, that we have to cheer on a team that's in the championship, but also a team that's in Europa League playing with, I don't know, like Union Berlin, perhaps, or something.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
I did that once going the other direction on FIFA. I managed to win the FA Cup while still sitting in League One when I was trying to get Bristol Rovers promoted up to the Premier League. So the next season I ended up simultaneously in the Championship and in Europa League.
Yeah.
There you go.
That'd be great. It'd be hilarious.
Yeah. All right. So for my next one, I'm going to head back into the Bundesliga, and I'm going to go with Eintracht Frankfurt to win 2-0 against Schalke for reasons that we've already discussed. Schalke is just circling the drain. It's not a good attack, and Frankfurt should really have no problems with this one, and that is plus 145 to get the Eagles to win 2-0.
There you go.
I love it. I love it because, yeah, Frankfurt's right in the mix. They're right in Champions League play, title contention at this point. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Schalke, we talked about it. They're just touring. They're just touring Bundesliga One.
Yep. All right. The next one. This is my last play. I'm not gonna play that one. I'm scratching it off too.
I got two more.
You have two more? All right. Yeah. Well, here, I'll throw this out there. I'm scratching off Everton double change.
Okay.
Just because I think Everton and West Ham both need a point. Like we talked about point congestion. Right. Like they just at this point, those teams in the bottom seven of the Prem, they can't afford to take 0 points. They need a point.
Mm-hmm.
And none of us think that Everton or West Ham are going to get relegated. So when you can give me one of those two teams at plus money to just not lose and they both get a point, it benefits both of them. That was my thought process. I want West Ham to win, but these teams both suck right now. I'm sorry, Thomas. It's bad.
I don't know if you just hear my play? Like I did plus 400 for them to get relegated. Like you don't got to say sorry. I'm on the same.
So plus 105. Okay, I'll play it then. Everton double chance at plus 105.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you're really, I mean, you're literally like which shit log is bigger? Like,
yeah, no, dude, what I'm doing here is I'm saying that like, the bookies want to say that like they want to entice people to bet West Ham money line.
Right.
But they both need a point.
Yeah. I think just the draw bet is probably fucking.
Oh, that's that is the best bang for your buck.
Yeah.
But I don't want to lose my buck.
Right. Right.
And that's my thought process. And since Dan has two more plays, I'll give one. I do really like my next play. So I'll go ahead and toss around again.
Okay. All right.
What do you got, Thomas?
No. I'm done. I'm out of place.
Okay.
All right. So my next play, I'm going to go up to the top of the table and take Bayern and both teams to score against Leipzig at plus 185, simply because Bayern still looks like themselves. They're probably still going to win the title, and they need to come up with a win to make sure that they can see off everybody else, because if Bayern gets 3 off of Leipzig, the race is probably over. That said, it's been 10 months since Leipzig last failed to score in a home match, so they're probably going to get at least a goal here. So Bayern both to score plus 185.
There you go.
I like that one. It has like a 1-5 feeling where Bayern gets like 5 and Leipzig gets 1. But like it, I think both teams will score. I think you're going to be celebrating that one super early.
Most
like
likely, 30, yes.
30 minutes in, you're going to be like, yeah, both teams score. Now I just need Bayern to finish it out. And I think they will. I think you're absolutely right. I love
it. It's either going to go that way or Bayern's up 3-0 and then you're fucking sweating that goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're
kicking
around.
Too.
And then,
I'm going to make a parlay play that combines the team I'm backing with my next one along with Bayern as a bonus play.
I will say the rule that Dan loves that I find ridiculous is if it's like 3 goals or more at the end of 90 minutes, they only do like, what is it? Like 1 minute or 2 minute of extra time.
Oh yes.
I hate that. I fucking, sorry.
Hey, I'm sorry. The reason I love that rule so much is the first time that I made a bet after the pandemic, was Dortmund Schalke. I had Dortmund 4-0, and the ref decides that he had seen enough right at the 90 minutes, and I cashed on a correct score play at plus 2,200.
Jesus. Yeah. I mean, it can either work out or...
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I got one more play for the weekend, but kind of tapping into Thomas's future plays, something that I talked about earlier. Manchester United to win the Prem is plus 2,500.
Ooh.
Yeah, okay, looking at the table, they're 8 points off. Arsenal has a game in hand.
And they play Arsenal this weekend.
All right. I'm not gonna.
I'm not saying to put the mortgage on that future. I'm just saying that, like, whatever your unit size is, it's worth a sprinkle.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
Take a small shot on it.
And I'm actually feeding into it with a play on the weekend, which is my last play, and that is Manchester United draw no bet. It's plus 195.
Yeah, that's solid.
Draw no bet plus 195, and everything that I've seen and read out of this situation is, how do you say his name? Gabancho, right? The Argentinian striker or forward?
Hmm.
Thomas?
I'm not sure.
What?
I'll look it up while I say it. But the whole point here is that Manchester United bought this kid from Argentina, and it was supposed to be like, when they bought him, it was supposed to be like Julian Alvarez that Man City bought. And when he came in, he had a terrible attitude, and they were playing him minutes, and then Ten Hag comes in and was like, dude, no, like, I'm not putting up with this, right? I don't know. Ten Hag seems like the old school hard ass Vince Lombardi style coach that I'm drawn to. Am I wrong, Thomas?
No. You're right. I mean, if you remember the first few games of the season, they were with 0 points, and people were like, he's going to get fired.
Garnacho is his name.
Alejandro. They wanted to fire Ten Hag, and he turned it around. He seems to be the right fit.
Yeah.
He ran Ronaldo out of the locker room. Dude, you got to respect somebody who does that.
Yeah, you're literally talking about a manager that said, Ronaldo, you're not good enough anymore, and we're not playing you, and then he left. And then Cristiano Ronaldo, like, he wasn't necessarily like out picketing against Man U either. Like, he wasn't throwing Ten Hag under the bus.
No, he literally did that. He literally did that right before the World Cup. That's why Bruno Fernandes and the other dude wouldn't shake his hand. He literally said players are playing that shouldn't be playing. Well, Ronaldo literally said that.
But who was right?
I mean, it's still unsettled.
Well, I think it's settled enough.
Yeah, I would say so.
We're January 19th. We'll see.
Okay. All right. I was wrong. Ronaldo did speak out. But I do think Ten Hag's right. I don't know, man. I hate Manchester United. But I like this guy.
Yeah. I like his mannerisms. I like a coach who will show legit disgust at a player fucking up. I've seen it several times from him on the
yes
eye rolls, passive aggressive body language. I love it. I love him too. I like him too. I really do like him.
Yeah, honestly. I fucking hate United, dude. But I like Ten Hag.
Me too. Did you say your play then or no?
Yeah, Manchester United draw no bet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And then Manchester United future to win the league at plus 2,500.
Let's do it.
All right, so for my last play, I'm going to go with into Serie A, and I'm taking Napoli and team total over 2.5 goals at plus 180, because this next matchup against Salernitana, I think is how it's pronounced. I mean, this looks like Bulldozer versus Dandelion, because Salernitana just had Atalanta drop 8 on them. They're coming in as losers of 4 or 5. They've given up 35 goals on the season, which is the most in the league. And Napoli scored 44, which is the most in the league. So I'm thinking that there's a pretty good chance Napoli can score 3 in this match. And I don't think they're going to have any problems winning this. So Napoli team total over 2.5 plus 180. And I'm also going to throw in a parlay of Bayern and Napoli money line at plus 135.
Perfect, dude. Corey, who is Salernitana's goalkeeper? who just gave up 8 goals. He's a guy who loves to give up 8, 7, 6. He's Mexican.
Memo?
It's Memo, yeah. Memo just gave up 8 goals last weekend. Again.
I find it so funny, dude. All these European teams, like, he comes out and shows out for the World Cup, and they're like, oh, give us that guy. And then he comes out there, and then it's just, he's shit.
It's absolute shit. Like, it's like, yeah, I mean.
And he sucked last World Cup, too. Let's be honest.
Yeah, he either stops trying or something. But, like, yeah, I mean, once again, a huge number was hung on. I mean,
no,
so it's not always on the goalkeeper. We know that.
Yes,
but
yes, but everybody.
It's 8 or 7 or 6. It is kind of on the goalkeeper.
Everybody gave him so much credit for that first match. San Memo's back. San Memo's back. San Memo's back. Yeah. And then he gives up 2 against Argentina. They don't get out of the group stage, but it's still San Memo.
Yeah.
No, give Tim Howard this credit. Tim Howard knew when to walk away.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, I know. You're right. You're right.
Tim Howard greater than Memo Ochoa.
That's a hot take, honestly.
That's not a hot take. But is it really that hot of a take?
It's simmering.
I mean, it's warm.
It's warm.
It's warm.
You might put the noodles in. Put them in.
Oh, they'll definitely, the noodles will definitely get soft. But it's not boiling.
Yeah, it's just, it's funny how many times he's had a crooked number hung on him, like so many times.
And how many times did Tim Howard have a number like that put on him?
No idea, but I doubt it's as many as Memo Ochoa.
Well, and see, and here's the thing, like, Mexican fans will point to that Brazil match.
Yeah.
But was that Brazil match that much more impressive than the Belgium match? I mean, it was. I will say
I'll say the Netherlands match 2014 was probably similar to Tim Howard.
Similar, yes. I will say this, that on an international career overall, you could probably put Memo, you know, the difference between an A and an A minus, or like an A minus and a B plus. Mm-hmm. Like it, but it's close. It's really close.
Right. Yeah.
But on
it's a, like, club, a 91 overall on a FIFA, or on a, yeah, FIFA.
Versus an 89.
Yeah. Yeah.
But on a club level, Memo has done things that are really bad that Tim Howard never did.
Yeah. He just gave up. I mean, he just gave up like 6 to Toluca in a game in December or in November. I mean, it's almost like he's stubborn and he's like, okay, like my defensive guy is like, if you're not fucking trying, you know what? I'm not going to stop a single fucking. I really think that's what he does.
He's
really good when he wants to be.
Yes. But to this day, I would 10 out of 10 times, I would rather have Tim Howard.
But that's why I love Dan's bets, is that, I mean, if they're just getting ripped apart by Napoli, Mo's been known to fucking give up 7 or 8 goals. So, I mean, team total over 2.5 plus the win. I love it. I love that bet. Tailing it 100%.
Agreed. All right. So, weekly shout out at Coda Caffers on Twitter. Give him a follow. If you like this, if you enjoyed this, give him a follow. I can probably personally say this without any shade. All of our DMs are open. We would love to collaborate with anybody, everybody. Like, we love soccer. We just want to talk about soccer. Anybody that wants to talk with us about it, we would absolutely enjoy that. So I just wanted to throw that out there. But anything you guys want to say before we let them go for the week?
No, I think well said. Thanks for sticking around. If you did, we'll see you guys next
week. Glad everyone's back on schedule.
Bye.